We'll call the Improvements Committee meeting July 8th, 2025 to order. I'm John Merchant, Chair of the Committee. Randy Jenko is absent this month. Item two is comments from the public. If anyone has anything you'd like to say prior to an agenda item, feel free to do so. If not, feel free also to speak item by item when we talk about this stuff. Item three, Eric, Improvement Staff Committee report, or a staff report.
1 second.
Yes, hot, strong coffee, friends. Help yourself. Okay.
My apologies. I was just getting everything lined up so I could see where we're at. The first item today for discussion is the WSC. It's listed as Water Vision Scopes. We've kind of modified that, and what it's really to do is look at a scope of work and also cost of services to basically do a well study for feasibility and location of a well. They would also develop the specs, which would be the requirements for a test well, as well as a full build-out well site. And so what's in the package is both of those items, a scope of work that lists out what they would be doing. Feasibility of a well would look at hydrological conditions, as well as locations that are pertinent to the existing infrastructure. And that would give us an idea of where to have people or developers look for water, as well as us in the future if we felt that that was which side we wanted to look with. It basically what they would do is list out sites and break them down, and then give us a list of potential sites to start looking for groundwater. And so that item is here for discussion, and what we would like to do is move it forward to the board for acceptance to enter into a contract with WSC to begin work on a water feasibility or groundwater feasibility study.
Okay. The question I have is in as part of this, are they gonna analyze the study that we did previously? Are we gonna hand them that to use, or are we gonna do this in parallel with what that says and then compare the two, or how are we gonna do that?
I would say no. The previous study was done on property that currently has changed hands, and so I think it's time for us, and we already know what that is, so I think we have the study. If we needed to return to it at some point, we would be discussing with a new property owner, or potentially a new property owner. I don't want to speak like I understand the full ramification, but I think it's time to look at a new study and have them look at new areas and leave them as two independent studies altogether. So they wouldn't be using the previous study. They would be looking at potential areas identified by the board and myself, and then we would start honing those down and having work done on that end of it. Because the study, not much has changed in the groundwater situation in this area. The water levels move maybe by 10 feet historically over years, and we can see that through monitoring wells, so there's not really a reason to have another study done in the same area that was done in the previous report.
Okay. So is this section of that all we're bringing forward with WSC right now?
Yeah, that's correct. We still have a contract with Adkins, and before we could ever do any part of that, we would need to close that contract.
What are we doing to make it's time to do that?
Correct. So I've just returned, and I'm going to be working with District Council and Adkins and Madhouse to close out that contract so that we can bring it back and WSC or another entity can start to take a look at our IWMP and finish it up.
Okay, so targeting that August?
Potentially.
To close the contract?
Yeah, potentially. It really depends on how much goes in on council side. My side isn't really much, because I think the contract really is done for all intensive purposes. It'll just be signing off, really, and so it'll come down right to legal clauses in a written agreement. So,
okay.
And I don't have any control over that.
Okay. Anything else we need to do here on this item? You have comments?
I'll just say that we're prepared at Ranch Marietta Properties is prepared to make this property available for testing.
Would you kindly?
Yeah, come on up. I'm sorry, just so we get it on the record. Thanks.
Sure, Greg Dyer for Ranch Marietta Properties. I just want to make it clear that Ranch Marietta Properties would make its property available for testing, and particularly we're interested in testing around Lake Clementia, between Clementia and the river.
So. Right, okay, great. Greg, thank you. Other comments? Do we have any? Come on
Richard
up.
Richard Kears, thank you so much.
I guess maybe you kind of answered my question, but didn't we just go through this process a few years ago and they did test wells, got the results, and what's going to be different this time? I know you're looking at different places for drilling the wells, but...
Yeah, I'll...
Do you want me to answer?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah, so... I wasn't here in the previous studies, and you're correct. There were previous studies done. Part of it's the Dunn Report. There's studies going back to, I believe, the late 1990s or mid-1990s. The property that was studied is property that previously belonged to Sullivan and then to Ward. And what happened during those studies is there was water found, but there became contract issues about those wells. The property owner wanted to sell us water in the event that we would use it, and that's not a position that the district would like to enter into. The district and myself, it was better if we have control not only of the property but also of the water, the groundwater. And so we can't really use those studies because the property has changed hands, and we would have to negotiate with that property owner to then basically do another study. And so it helps us to have all of our options open, and this will help identify those options, meaning could we eventually go back and look at the Dunn reports and build wells out there as well as looking closer to Clementia and other areas? Yes. This will just give us basically other options. It would be like doing a study of a market to determine the best place to invest your money. This is kind of doing a study to see where it's best for the district and for the community to invest so that they have alternative sources to build risk and resiliency in the system.
Okay. I wasn't too involved understanding what was involved for those other studies. So it wasn't a case where it wasn't feasible in terms of getting enough water from the wells.
So that's correct. I mean, it depends on what you mean by that. I want to be really careful when I say this. So there was water that was available, but I believe at the time, and I can't speak completely, I'm going to speak to intent, not legal. I believe the intent at that time from the district was to find a single well that could provide all of the water for the community. That was never found. And so even now, the old study still shows the same thing. The wells could not produce a single well with enough water to provide the whole community. And so looking at this feasibility is really to look at options and to diversify and to have a multitude of options. Anytime you have one of anything in the water industry, it's bad because you have one point of failure. And so trying to find these sources and alternatives is really what the district is invested in. And we can return and enter into discussions with the new property owner when they get settled about what was found in the previous reports. Currently, it's my understanding or belief that property has changed hands.
Okay.
There was a part of that too, Richard, that, and I was here in 2017 when we had those discussions. The discussions centered around test wells, first of all,
right.
not a realistic appraisal of what we could do production-wise from a well. And the real issues we had were in the agreement, both in the easement agreement and the use agreement that we were negotiating with the property owner at the time. There were questions as to, well, we'll dig a well and you'll pay for it, you being us. Yeah. We'll let you have the well in an emergency, but up until the time we have an emergency, we're going to use the well.
Oh yeah.
We were not buying into that. It was in terms of physical ability to provide it at the time, working with a test well, and the negotiations surrounding the use and easement agreements. Essentially what we did, I think, in 2018 or early 2018 is we just walked away from it. And understanding that we were dealing with one well at a time when two previous integrated water master plans had told us, you guys are fine, all you need is 300 acre feet in one set and 600 acre feet in the other, we know we're not there now. So things have changed, and I think this is this is a legitimate approach, and we're not going to exclude anything. We're just going to revisit it.
Okay. So you think it's possible you're going to come up with something that's feasible? You don't know. You
if
have to
I
do
if
study.
I knew that, we could sell save a hell of a lot of money on the study. I don't know. Yeah. You know, maybe not. Could be blood out of a rock. We'll find out. But
okay,
there you go.
Okay, thank you.
Questions? Anybody else? Anything?
Yes, Jim Farrell.
I just want to reinforce a point that I think you were just making, John, in terms of your question, Richard, is at that time we were looking for a well that would produce 380 gallons per minute. Now we're looking for well capacities that are close to 2,000 gallons per minute. So even if we used those previous wells, we're going to probably have to find six or seven more.
Okay. Anything else on this item? You want to go through the rest of your report?
So then you do want this to go to the board? Just to ask.
Yeah, so the next item that we have on there is IWMP unanswered questions. The work group is basically nearly complete. There's going to be basically an executive summary and a report that comes out from that work group. It is being wrapped up, so it isn't complete at this time. I'm hoping to have it at the next improvements committee so that it can come before the board. And so I don't really want to discuss a lot of the findings that are in there. It does answer questions that have been presented by various directors at the board level and also in the community. And that's why when these questions are answered, I think that's why we need to, in the contract with Adkins and Madhouse, and move to WSC basically finalizing this report using the findings that we have from the work group to answer questions and also to develop the IWMP in basically a more robust form where certain aspects of it will be changed. And I'll just throw out one. Splashboards, flashboards, whatever you want to call them. One of the findings was you're not able to use those as capacity. And in the study, they did use those. And so there's some highlighted concerns that we need to go back and redo. And there isn't an impetus to do it with the previous entities. And that's partially just because of a concern that I think is shared from the community and a loss of, shall we say, trust in the document. I don't want to say anything about their work. I wasn't a part of it, so I can't speak to which side created some of those. I don't know if it was the district or them. And so I think this is a no fault of everybody, but I think it's time to move on. And so we'll be presenting that. The work group did an excellent job. Somebody else is writing the executive summary other than me so that it's not in technical jargon, so that the community can kind of understand it. And so, you know, I've really appreciated everybody's work on it from the community. Their time is really essential in what drove this. So that's kind of where we're at with the IWMP.
Yeah. And I think until we release it, we'll leave it at that. We've got a lot of it now in draft form. We're working on a final copy that we can present to the board, and they've asked me as the chair of that group to add a covering letter to it. We can talk about timing. I think we can bring this to the next improvements meeting, and we need to schedule that around time that I won't be here. So we'll go from there. Go ahead.
Was there
questions, comments, anybody?
I have no questions on that topic, and I will put this on improvement before I take it to the board.
Sorry about that. The next item that we have is a quote for membranes for the water treatment plant. This quote is basically to purchase the membranes and also items that would go to that. What the membranes really are is they provide filtration for drinking water treatment. They're critical. Typically, a membrane lasts somewhere between 5 and 10 years. The district did not have a replacement policy. Those membranes are at their end of life. And so this is something that eventually will be an ongoing annual cost. It will be split in half, so the current, and I can't promise that the current cost is going to drop by 50% because, of course, it's based off market values. But this is the cycle that we're in. Basically, we're purchasing twice the amount because they're at end of life, so we're purchasing twice the amount that we normally would if we were doing it on a 10-year cycle, and that's very common when you have newer membranes, because those first 10 years, you don't want to start buying them, you know, at year one because they're brand new. And so typically what we've seen, and what I did with Stockton, which had a huge amount of membranes, was basically at year five or six when the membranes were starting to go, that first next 10-year cycle was twice the amount. And then when you ended that 5-year cycle, you would go into a cycle of one, whatever you need for one out of those 10 years. So that way your budget is just every year you're purchasing a set amount of membranes to keep them in life and to keep rotating and replacing them. This is an ongoing cost. There isn't a way around it unless the district would completely redesign that facility. They would have to remove the membranes and go with some other type of treatment. The cost of that is very high. And so this literally is just an operational cost associated with having a membrane plant.
Yeah, I read it. Amelia, this needs to go to Patrick. I mean, this thing is full of, well, now we have tariffs, and yeah, now we have shipping, and yeah, now they're in Canada, and there's, I didn't read, because that's why we employ him. I didn't read the last two pages of, you know, the fine print, the terms and conditions. I just want him to
give it his blessing,
air that thing out,
yeah.
And tell us if he finds it acceptable.
And if he doesn't, I can take it to the board next week.
Yeah. If he can get, okay. If he can just at the meeting give us an appraisal of his analysis of what it says. I don't have any concerns with the costs. They are what they are. They happen to mention in there that, you know, don't wait around because we reserve the right to give those membranes to somebody else if you're not prepared to take them.
Okay.
So I want to get this, you know, off the table and finished.
Tariffs.
So I can speak to a little bit of that as well, because we've done this. We did this last year. The membranes are ordered during the summer and delivered during the winter. And the reason that is they have a temperature requirement that they're stored at. They also have to be stored wet. You can't dry them out. And so we order basically like 6 months in advance, and that gets them through the production cycle, because they queue that basically into what they're going to have made for them. The other thing is there may be comments on the contract language. There's not another entity that you can buy these membranes from.
Yeah,
we can make contractual adjustments, but basically they are the only person we can purchase from, and this is very common with membranes, that they have this type of agreement. We also only replace them in the winter because that's when water demand is the lowest, so we can remove the plant without any disruption or concern over safety.
So when you're done with this purchase and they show up on our front door, are you going to drop all these in, or are we actually going to be storing some?
Almost all of them are dropped in place.
Okay, because that was my next question when I read this thing was, do we have a suitable place to do what they're telling us we have to do in terms of storage?
Yes, and they've been able to do this. So when they show up, they will move them out. So they're delivered here at this site. They're moved out to the water plant and stored in the location. And they're near, I won't say immediately, but let's say within a month, they're replaced.
Okay.
And I think we may store one or two or one. But we do not, because it isn't an item that you need. It's not like a valve where if the valve fails, you need another valve. These usually, there's usually a set amount that you can drop, usually 10%, and still function at your full capacity. So there isn't a need to have them basically sitting around waiting just in case. And they don't, it's It's not like a widget that just fails, if that makes sense.
So the other part of this membrane problem is long-term as we start adding demand. Is there a feeling that these are readily available or will continue to be readily available, or is there anything, for example, when we created the CFD, when we created 2014-1, inherent in that is a $540,000 deposit that would be used against Carol's demand for more modules. And when we built the plant, we financed the plant, we also financed long-term replacement modules, which now, technically at the time we did it, we would now be using because that's what the demand said. Is there second sourcing, or is there any obstacle you see down the road to?
Yeah, so I can speak to that. It is a risk when you enter into a membrane treatment facility or plant, and that was concern from large entities and agencies. Currently, there are entities that are working to replicate the membranes, and what I'll say by that is sometimes they're looking to replicate how they fit into certain ones, because not all membranes are the same. Even that may or may not make sense. There's different styles of them. For example, Stockton runs a completely pressurized system of membranes where the water is pumped into these membranes and moves from the outside in. The style that we have is an unpressurized open top. They basically sit in and water is pushed through the membrane in the basin. So you can see how this gets really complicated. Currently, there are not other options. And typically the other options that are out there is from is usually a Chinese manufacturer, which creates even more concern. And then also, they have to be approved by State Water Resources Control Board to even be used or tested. So is there a risk to the district? 100% yes. Is there another alternative to buying them? No, there is not currently. And so you are hoping that if the entity goes out of business, which typically they don't really go out of business, usually they're bought up by somebody else because this is kind of their gravy. It's an ongoing expense that keeps them going. But that's why it's good to purchase early and to keep them going and to stay on that annual cycle, is so that you keep that warranty in place and you keep purchasing them.
So based on existing demand, in layman's terms, have you bought 10 years worth?
You buy 10 years when you start up. So when you first started up,
yeah,
you bought, and it's not like a 10-year length. What you're really buying is the capacity volume. The money that was, I believe, placed by Ward and Sullivan was if we were going to expand, because there are empty spots, if you will.
Yes.
And so those empty spots have not been filled because there isn't a need for capacity through the plant. Our real issue is in supply, but those are still existing. So the money is still there because what we're purchasing now is to replace what was already there.
No, yeah, and that, right. That part I understand. What I'm asking is based on existing demand, where we are now, we're replacing everything we have installed?
So we're replacing one-fifth every year. Okay. So if that makes sense, so then if you do that by the end, you double it, that you've replaced them all.
So it's $163,000 for 87, which is one-fifth of our total
right.
membrane.
So okay. at the end of that five-year pattern, you replaced the total capacity. Starting year six of that pattern, you start doing one-tenth. And that way you do one-tenth every year. So every year you're just going to buy one-tenth of the membranes for your capacity, and it's just going to go on for the eternity of that membrane plant, because that way your budget stays the same. And
yes,
it never changes. So instead of storing up a big bulk of money like you would as a property owner, it's easier for a government entity to have their operational budget stay the same. And so you just buy one-tenth of them every single year.
So on the sixth year, we can expect this $163,000 to roughly go in half, about
right.
50% of that.
Barring okay. inflation and manufacturing
yeah.
costs.
Who knows what.
In year six, this should reduce. If we were looking at it, measuring them the same, 50% drops off. But that is an ongoing, that 50% becomes an ongoing every year.
Okay.
to the board.
Yeah. I just always look forward to these potential catastrophes, you know.
So far I haven't really seen them happen. And you got to understand, these entities have changed hands since the 70s. So U.S. Filter was one of them. Siemens has been one of them. Wallace and Tiernan. I mean, there's a long Viola. And so this wasn't a lot of their technology. And usually what happens is they get bought up by another entity. They sell that portion off to somebody else. So usually it doesn't go away, but is there a risk? Yes, there is.
Yeah, well, this was General Electric.
Yeah, yeah. So,
in the beginning.
Yeah, so you can see they change hands numerous, and usually somebody ends up with this portion of the business because there's entities, and so it's just an easy, we'll say an easy money train because they receive money, they sell it, and the entities need it.
Okay. All right, to the board.
To the board, okay.
Next case.
All right, so we're going to discuss the recent leak. So previous to the event the other night, there was an event during the day where there was a leak that was near Rio Oso tank. It was reported that there was a service connection leak. Staff went out on site. They were trying to make this repair. I don't want to speak too much to some of the operational issues. Let's just say it wasn't well managed, and I'll take responsibility for that. That is my staff. And so what happened is they went out to do the repair. They hadn't really tested the valves prior to making this repair. I think it was a little rushed, and it was not communicated back to me that this repair was going to take place. And so staff decided to go ahead and make the repair without testing the proper appurtenances in kind of a rush for some reason. A service line connection is not a big deal for an entity of this size, or typically really any entity. And so they did not check the valves prior to starting the repair. So they entered into making the repair and then found out that they could not shut off the water to this area. And one of the valves that they needed to do it was broke. And so they decided, or they needed to replace that valve. And that's what caused the issue, because when they lowered the pressure in the system to reduce, to be able to replace the valve, that impacted everybody in the system. I wasn't made aware of it even at that point. I basically became aware when people started calling in about no pressure or loss of pressure. We'll say low pressure.
Yeah, I was in the middle of the ninth inning of the Giants game when I started getting the calls, yes.
Yeah, so it wasn't, I would say, I was less than satisfied. We have had some meetings with staff. This is still very recent. Also, we found out that there's quite a few issues, which we'll come up with here in a little bit. I'm not one to Monday morning quarterback, so I did not go out on site, because at that point it doesn't help having me out there demanding things to be done and putting things in order. Travis was handling the response, and he was handling it well, and he was staying in contact with me when we both found out what was going on. Later on, we've had a meeting with staff to discuss improvements. We haven't yet had a meeting to discuss what actually took place. There were some safety concerns. There were concerns with residents trying to enter the site, trying to find out what's going on. And so we've had discussion over that, and there will be a lot of standard operating procedure changes that are done. Contacts will be made. And then also we are preparing the front office staff to have what we call scripted messages. So when people call in, they can read the scripted message. There's also some potential issues with when people call in that they're immediately being put through to staff in an emergency situation. That is not necessary. It's not ideal. They should be directed to a manager who's basically me. I'm kind of removed from the situation unless I've really got to be out there. And so there's going to be some corrections, if you will, and fixes that are made. Also, we are in the process and should have a new employee for replacing Ron for the utility supervisor position. This person will enter the district with over 20 years of experience. They are the highest rated that you can be in distribution. They're a D5. They worked for very large systems. This is going to be some of those tasks that they take on to help me facilitate this. And because they have that experience, plus it'll give them the ability to work with other staff so that they get to meet everybody. And they'll be working with me to answer a lot of these questions while we also meet with staff to train and to go over it. Following that, we may even do what's called a tabletop exercise, where we basically, and I don't want people to get this wrong, we would create a scenario that that is not live, meaning you would create it basically at a desk, and you talk, you work it through and talk these things out. Water, we do not or should not ever basically create an emergency situation in the real world. So you don't go out and close valves or go out and do that type of stuff, because then you're creating risk you don't necessarily need. But those tabletop exercises give us a great opportunity to hone what we do as a craft, and I think that's what needs to be done. Following that, there was some other operational concerns on what messages have been given to the residents, apparently almost for the entire history of the district. Flushing is advised in these events, but the type of flushing, so I'll put it on record here, the type of flushing that's being relayed from the district is inappropriate. And really what should be happening is when we flush, if you're a resident, you should turn on the first spigot closest to the connection or the main, which would be your irrigation spigot on the front of your house. And I don't think we have any backyard mains. That would be the one you want to turn on. You do not want to turn on any other faucet if at all possible. If you turn on stuff inside your home, you're just going to bring that material into your home. The other thing is you do not want to do this long term. This would be a short term fix. Typically, when a system is dropped in pressure and then the pressure returns, there's air that's been introduced. And so if you think about it as taking like a glass filled with a lighter material than sand, but around that, and you basically smacked it on your desk real hard and it stirred itself up like a snow globe, all of that flushing and everybody, us flushing the fire hydrants and people turning on their faucets, all that does is create that material to stay completely stirred up. The material is not something that's been introduced from outside the pipe. It's material that's sat in the pipe, adhered to the walls of the pipe. Usually it's iron, manganese, calcium, hydroxide. Actually, most of them are beneficial to the body. They're just really unsightly. So the water is still safe to drink. So I just wouldn't recommend it aesthetically. Not real pretty. Usually if you do run it and collect it in a glass and then just sit it there for like 5 minutes, you'll notice that all that material is at the bottom. That's the same thing we have to do to the system when that happens. Our staff has to get out into areas that are higher elevations. If you've ever seen air introduced into a pipe with water, the air is always going to sit at the highest elevation. That's got to be relieved off the system because it can stop services to those upper elevations. So there's quite a bit of work to do on that.
Okay. Do you want to take that beyond that to the code red? First of all, Amelia and I talked about this as this thing was occurring, and we've had this system in place for years, and I think we operated it around an assumption that, you know, if the water plant is burning down, we would use code red. And the question I asked was, well, what about like this? We have this collection of names where in the implementation of this originally we collected these on a voluntary basis from people who wanted to be notified. I think through our communications committee, I mean, we need to run something to I can't for the life of me understand why someone would not want to be on this list. And we have the ability in using it to regionalize it. You know, so if Upper Puerto is an issue, we can tell the people on Upper Puerto, and we don't have to tell the rest of the community that they have a problem when they don't. But I think there's work to do on that end to really develop this and use it, expand the use of it, and enhance the communication that we have now.
Yes.
So I'll hop in on that part about Code Red. So there was a separate incident that did happen and take place. It was a couple days later. SMUD was doing work in the early evening. I guess what depends on what you call early or late evening. So we'll say during the evening. That the work they were doing caused a drop in voltage across the 480 volt lines, which is high power. So none of the residents would have noticed this as an issue, like with their lights in their home or any of their stuff. What it did was our devices that control our pumps and motors, they have an electrical safety feature, and so they're looking at that line feed. And I'm not going to get into super technical, but basically it's like having three plugs that run one motor. And so it's looking at each one of those plugs saying, am I getting the right voltage? Well, during this incident, it dropped the voltage across those three, and so those instruments shut down to protect the motor and the pump. When they shut down, pressure was lost, or started dropping because there's no pumping going on. The code red is instrumental in the use of this, and it is nice that it has a area or mapping to it. It is not ideal to use that in a situation like this, because if we conserve water in the Van Vleck zone, we could actually, enough conservation builds pressure, that pressure moves into the Rio Oso zone. And so there is a very, I actually just had a recent conversation with a programmer that I've worked with for years. So there's what was built into the fiscal budget was to get a lot of this work done. This is one of the items that is absolutely critical, because we can see how if there's a failure on one side of the system, basically right now it's that one point of failure. There is a controllable valve that is installed without the controls being connected currently that would allow water to move between the two zones and would allow us to keep areas pressurized. And so that's why typically almost, I would say probably 98% of the time, you're going to see a call go out to everyone. And usually the other thing is I would hate to make a call saying, if you live inside these four streets, then conserve water. And people are going to be like, well, I'm not sure if I'm in that area or not in that area. And so then you start generating a bunch of calls, where a lot of times it's just easier to say, hey, everybody, conserve water for the interim. And then that's what we did in this last one. It took place during the night. Yet again, I'll take responsibility. Not super familiar with Code Red. It was my first issue using it. I received a call not from staff, and that's how I became aware of the issue. Amelia was instrumental and contacted me. She actually helped me do the Code Red, and she was helping with the messaging that was going to be in place. And once we got that going, we were able to start the process of notifying through Code Red. The process is, we'll say, less than ideal, because it is like an auto dial, so it calls one person at a time. And it does give you a breakdown. I haven't looked. So the last scenario that we ran, because it was the all clear, that one called over like 7,600 people, 7,600 phone numbers to tell them the all clear. The original warning message only went out to about 30%, and that's because the condition cleared about halfway through, or at that 30%, the condition became clear. And so I stopped the message to work on creating the all clear so that people weren't confused by what was going on, waited a few minutes, and then started the all clear. And we let the all clear go through everyone. And the reason that we decided to do that was because if Bob lives in the north and, you know, me, Eric, in the south, they may start calling each other and, hey, did you know this problem? And then they're going to start calling us like, hey, is it okay over here? And so that's why I wanted the all clear to go through everybody. That way everybody, and they may not be aware of the first condition, but at least they know, okay, something happened, but we're good to use water.
Yeah.
And so that's the process we went through.
So, you know, I think that when we use it and who we use it to and whether we direct it locally or globally are management questions. You guys figure that out. I'd like to understand, if we make 7,600 calls and the census says we have 6,000 people, I mean, do people have like two phones?
Well, it's also the fact that if you were elderly, you'd want your kids who live in Sacramento or Elk Grove to be on that alert too.
Oh, okay.
So your families can sign up.
So we don't really understand how effective we've been to this point in soliciting everyone. If you said, well, we had 3,000 names on the list, you could make a different assumption, but you can't make it based on the fact that we have that. So maybe we just, you know, design and run a program, not a computer program, but a marketing program anyway.
I would say
as many people as we can.
I would say it should be something, and I don't know, Amelia, I believe we have Facebook, so it should be something that's on social media and gets brought up all the time. Also, it should be basically on the bottom of the pipeline or on our billing mailer, because if I buy a property today, I don't know about this tomorrow. And so it's something that even a small spot should just say, make sure to sign up for Code Red. That's how we contact you in emergencies.
Okay.
And it could be very small, but I think that's extremely beneficial. And I think maybe then once a year or every 6 months, we audit that list.
Okay.
But how we audit it gets really hard. And what I would say is, better to call everybody who signed up in the world than...
Yeah, I'm not right? even as concerned. And you guys can figure all this out. But
right.
I'm not concerned that people stay on the list. I really could care if the list gets oversubscribed, if you want to call it that. I'm more concerned about catching the people that are not on the list. If the list gets to 10,000 and we make 10,000 calls, so be it. I mean, that's what we'll do.
Okay. And my question is still, what constitutes a code red?
That's a management call.
Yeah, and that's okay. I would say that as well. And I think in this situation, had I been appraised of the situation, this definitely would have been code red. I was not appraised of the situation. And the moment that I was the moment that we started working on the code red system.
Yeah.
So that's the best way I can say.
If you get something that is an impact on the color, appearance, et cetera, of water inside the home, that's an automatic. I mean, beyond that, you guys figure it out, you know.
Yeah, I knew immediately in both situations this was something that needed to be a code red, because it was a call for, we term it water conservation in the industry. Realistically, it's emergency water usage, meaning please don't use water unless you need to. And what that does is it provides pressure to stay in the pipes so that no intrusion happens into the system, which then could degrade the water quality or potentially put people at risk.
If you were, for example, too, as we go forward and we get into developing an urban plan that's going to have us, is going to require us to demonstrate that we have these systems in place. If you're going to go to, you know, north-south watering on different days, or you're going to go by address to different water on different days, you need a universal communicative tool that you can use, you know, short of somebody getting a pipeline and throwing it in the recycling bin.
Yeah, and I believe that's already part of our permit from State Water Resources Control Board, not based off size, and what it's called is an emergency water quality notification plan.
Right.
That plan does talk about how you notify the community, and there is also boilerplate notices for media that are on State Water Resources Control Board. The one thing that I will tell the community and also will remind staff in training is that is not a decision that is made by the entity. That's a decision that is made by State Water Resources Control Board, meaning, and I'm not talking about stop use of water, but some of these notifications are a dual process where they are involved, and so sometimes that can slow the messaging down because we can't always immediately go directly and notify, because if it comes out that it's wrong, potentially you could be in violation and they can fine you. And this actually did happen to the former person who was our chief plant operator, Dave Herman, when he was at EID, made a notification to a school system and later found out there was no risk, and that was not dealt with well. And so they had to put on a lot of training. So there are times where you have to communicate, but there already is an emergency water quality notification plan. That plan spells out exact things. I think what we've learned is that we really don't have boilerplate notification really at all. And then we need to hammer home to staff that yes, they may be in control of the system, but they need to be notifying the manager as well so that I can start the other end of it, which is notification. They're really going to handle the operational end, and my side is budgetary management of the situation, and I think that's where we needed more training
right.
on these
so, events. So that's a communications...
Yeah. I'll put it everywhere.
I mean, it sounds like, you know, it's more of a written... procedure about how we handle this or how we use this.
Yeah, standard operating procedures is what we reference them. I also made some comments. We would create a standard operating procedure for how you do a code red with, because you can create scenarios where you just launch them automatically directly in there. Currently, there's nothing in there, so we have to create it in that moment, which takes time. And so once those are created, they would be laminated and kept with the chief plan operator and the director of operations laptops.
And also, we have to add in the security department because
yes.
there could be a code red that totally involves security and doesn't involve operations at all.
Right.
So
right.
so he, Brandon, will be involved in the creation of the standard messages. He will have the keys to that kingdom as well.
Okay. All right. Well, put that on your communications agenda and
okay.
what you need to do.
And I do have comment if
yes.
you're ready.
Yes, okay.
And we have 13 minutes until the next meeting starts. Richard Gears. I am having technical difficulties, you all know, so I'm going to turn the timer on my phone this morning.
Okay.
It sounds like I don't need... I'll talk fast. It sounds like I don't need to say this, but I'd just like to mention that it is helpful hearing this explanation. I got one of these calls, and I said, why am I getting this call? But now I learned. And then... I got one call, my partner didn't get the call. She was saying, why didn't she get it? You know? And then another one, I got the call, and then 20 minutes later, she got the call. What's going on?
Yeah.
It just helps to know this. So.
Yeah, and I would say part of that was my fault in the rush to get the all clear. I should have had a part that said there was a water quality emergency notice that went out prior to this. This is the all clear message. Everything is okay. That way people who didn't get the first were aware that something had gone out. They just may have not heard it. But it does help to touch base. And
yeah.
I think it's something we'll probably put in communications to put it on the pipeline so that people get the gist.
And, you know, there may be, you can have this discussion and I don't want to have it now, but there may be a test you want to run.
Yes.
I mean, to see, okay, if there are issues, like, well,
yeah.
Richard's partner didn't get a message. Well, why?
Well, she didn't get it because she was the later half of that.
Yes.
So only
yeah.
about 35%.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
She
okay.
was in that
okay.
65%.
Yeah, and I think that came down to my bad message, or we'll say a message that was lacking the prior information. But definitely tabletop scenario exercises need to be done, and they need to be done either on a quarterly or a 6-month period so that staff is aware this is what we do when there's a critical emergency, because if you don't train on these items, and some of them, it'll go 10, 15 years sometimes before you have something like this. And so when you go to do it, they weren't here for the last one. They don't know. They've never done one. And so tabletop exercises become critical, and we'll make sure to add that as part of the training.
So maybe this is good. It's a learning experience.
Yeah.
So that is what I've learned in management, and that's why I don't go out on site, is because when you're out on site, all you're doing is stressing out staff. And so it is. You have to sit back and take it as a learning exercise, but it also highlights all of your deficiencies. And every time that you have an event like this, you hone your process
yes.
because you learn something you didn't know, and you make sure that you eliminate that or do your best to try to eliminate it for the future, and that's what we're doing.
Right. It's like the Army. These things work perfectly until the shooting starts. Yeah.
Jim Farrell.
Just more on the same thing in terms of the message. You know, I got it, and I have to say, I'm going, what is this? Who's this coming from? What does this mean? I was actually surprised that I got it. I didn't realize that I'd signed up for something like that. So, I mean, there's all of that part. So, as you guys go back and debrief it, you know, it probably should say somewhere in there, oh, this is the Rancho Marietta, you know, services district, and maybe a little more clarity on the whole first one I got was kind of like, I'm not sure, does that affect me? Or I wasn't sure what to do. Just, again, I'm not being critical here, just giving you feedback. The message that was all clear was obviously pretty clear. But it was just more like when I got it, I went, what? I'm not sure what I'm supposed to do with this. You know, so that's
okay.
All.
Yeah.
That's all. I mean, yeah, and I appreciate the criticism. That's my first time ever entering into the Code Red, to be honest. And it was so delayed because we were working on how to initiate the launch of it to get it out there that basically I just wanted a message to go out basically, if you can, don't use any water right now.
Yeah. I don't even know. You know, it was...
Did you get it?
No.
Oh, we need to get you signed up then, don't we?
I don't... He can't even tell you whether I did sign up or I didn't, or we'll whether Marlene out. Did or didn't. I have no idea. And I think that's a lot of people. It's been a long time since we did this.
We've done it three times in the 6 years I've been here.
Yeah.
So this is the third time in 6 years that I've been here. So.
And, okay. All right. What else? We got anything else?
I say good learning exercise.
Yeah, it was a great learning exercise, and we've definitely found that we have a lot to improve. And that's all that I have.
Any further public comments? Anything else going on? I have no comments. Anything else, or we will adjourn.
Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you very much. Yes, 8 minutes early.